I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Stevenson. Have you ever seen somebody mountain boarding behind the back of a horse via a rope whilst the horse is galloping around poles? It's incredible. It's called Horseboarding UK, and today we speak to the founder, Daniel Fowler Prime, about how he came up with the idea and how horseboarding is taking the equestrian industry by storm. This is Horse Hour. Today we're talking about a new kind of equestrian sport. I like to think of it as the equestrian sport for adrenaline junkies. And I'd like to introduce Daniel Fowler Prime, who's the founder of Horseboarding UK. How are you, Daniel?
I'm very good, thank you.
This is so exciting. I saw you've horseboarding's been around for quite a few years now. What is it, 8 years?
Well, it's been through several points of evolution, really, from the very first idea, which was back in 2004, to the first competition in 2008, and then really went through a little bit of a development stage up until about 2013 when we started Horseboarding UK.
Well, I only heard about it for the first time this year, and I was lucky enough to go along to one of your events in Hampshire, and it is the coolest sport I've ever seen. It's so much fun. Can you briefly describe to us what horseboarding is?
Yeah, well, the simplest form is you have a horse rider, and a guy or girl on a mountain board or an off-road skateboard, which race around a twisting, turning course in the fastest time possible.
So it's like, it's basically skateboarding around the back of a horse, isn't it?
Yes. don't go and do that literally at home. Go skateboarding around the back of your horse. But yeah, basically you are racing your team, which consists of your three elements, the horse rider, the horse and the board rider, around a course against the clock.
So you can see some of the videos of the championships that we went to last month. If you head to our website, horsehour.co.uk, and head to your website, which is horseboardinguk.org, and you can see some of the teams that are taking part. Because to be quite honest, I don't think you really understand it until you see what it's like and you get the atmosphere. It's a very fun, uplifting, engaging sport. And it brings the fun back into equestrianism, I think.
Well, that's a wonderful comment. Thank you.
Well, no, it was. I mean, it got my adrenaline going because I'm thinking, gosh, not only have you got the power of the horse and the skill of the rider who has to be able to manoeuvre, a bit like, how can I explain it, gymkhanas. So they have to go around like slaloms. Behind them is then the skill and the balance of the board rider. And what's so lovely watching them was that they actually work as a team. So they're talking to each other all the time, which direction they're going to go to. But we'll talk about that more in detail in a bit. I'm fascinated to know, how did you first come up with the idea?
Well, my background is working with horses in film and TV. So I put that as being an environment where pretty much anything's possible. So if somebody, it's not a question of you can't do that with the horses. How can you make that situation happen? As opposed to being in an environment which is very controlled like normal equestrianism, and which is all built on rules that have been set up for a very long time. Mm. So I was also a keen skater and a keen surfer and pretty much anything I could stand on. So being in the two sorts of environments, it was only a matter of time before I thought, could I put the surfing and the skateboarding and mountain boarding together with the horse? And if we did do it, what would that mean, and what could we do with it from then on in? So the first sort of scenario was, at the time I was doing an awful lot of trick riding, which a lot of people will call stunt riding, but there are some some differences. But if you've seen any of the stunt teams that work around the country doing Cossack shows or Wild West shows, I've pretty much worked for all of them in this country at some point or another. And what you would do is you would run from one corner of the arena to the other corner of the arena, jump on and off the horse, stand on the horse, hang off the horse, pick hats up off the ground. Gymnastics at a gallop, basically. So initially, when we first worked out that we could tie a board onto the back of a horse and the horse would be okay with it, was to do that as a part of the show. So we would basically do, I would do a trick where I would just run the horse loose across the arena and he would run from one corner to the other corner and I'd tow along behind him on a board. And then along with that, sometimes I'd pick hats up or whatever, assuming I didn't fall off, which did happen a lot.
But is this with a rider or without a rider?
No, this was without a rider.
That's so, even more insane.
Yeah, well, the thing was, when you're training a stunt horse like that to do those sorts of tricks, what you really teach them to do is to start from point A, being one corner of the arena, and run to the opposite corner on a diagonal line. And the way in which the horse works is that they pay no attention to what the horse rider's doing. Mm. So instead of normally, if you're sitting on a horse, you're giving the horse signals when you're riding and so on and so forth. Obviously, they needed to have that skill as well because you need to be able to ride them. But when you let them go, what they needed to learn then at that point was to compensate for weight and do everything else. As a trick rider, when you're hanging off the side of the horse, you have no control over what the horse is doing. The horse is doing it, and you have to trust the horse to run from one point to the other and keep yourself balanced. So taking the rider out of that equation, once you've got the horse going, wasn't too much of a difficult jump because you're still with the horse and you know you can be anywhere around the vicinity of them. And they'll still run because he knows that I've got to run from here to there and stop. Mm. And that's his job. That's his main focus. The horse will, of course, learn the tricks that you're doing and compensate for those, in certain, particularly they're heavy or whatever. My horse particularly was very good at hats. So people said I was very good at hats, but the thing was the horse always used to put me on top of the hat. So that was helpful.
So I guess you've got to really build up a good trust bond and relationship with your horse. We often see these trick riders and I think, oh, you're throwing yourselves around and it's not the soft and gentle way that we're used to seeing in dressage or equestrianism. But I guess you must be quiet and calm with your training.
Yeah, they have to learn, the horses have to learn the tricks as much as the rider has to learn the trick. So and horses will even learn your routine. So if you've got a number, if you're doing five or six tricks in a show and you're working with that horse all the time, they'll know, okay, the first trick he's going to do this and they'll compensate for that and so on and so forth. What you don't want to do, and also as well, it's about your movement. So you've got to move in a controlled manner, a bit more like a gymnast than just throwing a lead weight off the side of the horse. Because if you just throw your weight off the horse, you will interrupt their running. You know, whereas if you control your weight and how you move, then the horse can compensate for that and still run straight.
A friend of mine came and had some lessons with you. You don't even know this. She was telling she's been telling me for ages that she took her horse and went for a trick riding week. And it wasn't until I brought her with me to watch Horseboarding UK. She said, that's who I had my lessons with. And no joke, Ruby has been banging on about her trick riding for years. And she said she'd love to get back into it. And she was mesmerized with the balance, the skill, it's about the rhythm of the horse and how much inner strength she needed to be able to keep herself on top of the horse. I mean, Jimmy's a thoroughbred. We know he can run, but to have that control was pretty immense from what she was saying anyway.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, it does open a whole new aspect of riding, really, in understanding your horse and your horse's movements. It's all very well if you're riding a horse, and even a good dressage rider, and you can feel how the horse is moving. But as a trick rider, you need to be hanging off the side of them and still knowing how they're moving and still at a gallop, so that if they do trip or something like this, you'll know they've tripped before they're actually going to fall over, if you like. So if they trip themselves, you can actually get back into the saddle and support them and lift them back up and make sure they don't fall. And it gives you a heightened awareness of your horse's movements. It doesn't mean you can do a dressage test, but it means you can hang off.
anyone that does a sport like this, and I think I believe it's the same with polo, I believe it's the same with racing, I think anything where there's a huge amount of speed, I mean, you guys are going up to 28, 30 miles an hour. I think you're incredibly brave. I mean, you're brave to be throwing yourself off the side of a horse anyway, but what was lovely from watching the horse boarding is that you have amateur riders that are not, you know, high level competitors in any way. There was a father and a daughter there, where the daughter was, I think she was about 11, and the dad was mountain boarding off the back. And it was the training and the teaching the horse, teaching the father, teaching the daughter to ride all together. And it was really lovely to see that you don't have to be an exceptional rider to be able to do this. I mean, what kind of caliber of riding do you need?
I mean, you need to be comfortable riding at speed. You need to be able to walk, trot, canter, obviously. You need to be comfortable having the reins in one hand for when you're doing your quick releases of the handle and of the rope.
The rope isn't actually tied onto the saddle, is it? Can you explain the connection of the quick release?
Yeah, we developed a harness which fits on a normal English saddle, which you can order from Horseboarding UK. And so this works, goes through the gullet and around the tree of the saddle. And on the back, it gives you a big D-ring. And then the horse rider wears a belt with another D-ring on it. And there's a 3-pin panic release connected to that, the D-ring that's on the horse rider. And then a snap shackle connected onto the D, which is on the saddle. So you've got like what we call the leash. And then onto the snap shackle is connected another panic release for the handle. So when you want to, as you're riding around and you want to release your board rider, you grab your belt with your 3-pin panic release, snap that down, pull your arm to the side, and that will release the snap shackle on the back so the handle comes completely loose. Obviously, you can't have two hands on the reins and do that at the same time. And also what this system means is that if the horse rider should fall off, is that as the horse rider comes away from the horse, then the snap shackle will automatically release so that you don't end up with a situation where a horse is running around with a handle behind it, you know, and people trying to catch it and things like this. So it'll just come away and the horse is free then.
That's brilliant, because, I mean, they would freak out, surely, if they had something flying. Oh, well, I'm saying that they're used to things flying around behind.
Yeah,
them.
I mean, the thing is, when we train them, so we run training courses regularly all over the country for people who are interested in it, in bringing their horses and getting them used to the sport. And part of that course is teaching the horses to tow a loose handle, because what we found years ago is that we had a particular horse that we taught to tow, took to it lovely, until the first time a board rider fell off, and then the rope went loose and it was flapping about and the horse didn't like it. So then we introduced that into the training method, so that we explained to the horses that they can have this loose handle and it's not just going to chase behind them. There's particular exercises that we use to show them this, so when they do crash, when a board rider does crash in the arena with or without the horse rider still on, if they did have the handle, the horse won't react to it. But it's still an added risk that you just don't need to have on the back of the horse. If you can work out a system, which is what we went away and did, work out a system where the horse is just without this extra bit of rope hanging out the back, then it's a lot safer.
It's a good idea. And because there are a lot of crashes in terms of the boarders, you know, we saw quite a few falling off. Luckily, riders are good. They tend to stay on. The horses just do their thing. The boarders, that's part of the excitement of it, though, is that they're going to fall off.
And also part of the way the rules were written, I mean, the sport is manufactured to be an arena entertainment. So the rules are manufactured in a way which will give entertainment to the audience. That's the way it's meant to be. So the reason that it's only your fastest runs that count, so within a day, certainly in the novice and intermediate, you get 6 attempts at the course. It's only your fastest that counts, to encourage the teams to push that little bit faster, so that it encourages them to go as fast as they can, which invariably leads to a situation where the board riders will come off, and that's what's part of the entertainment value, being totally honest.
And they take it very well as well. They, you know, hands up, happy to be stood back on their feet again.
Oh, yeah. And they're all very well padded. I mean, they're padded from head to toe in body armour, so that helps.
It was interesting. I had a lovely chat with Sandy, who's a board rider, and he said he'd never done board riding before. He'd never done anything like it, but saw the sport and thought, does he do it with his girlfriend?
Yes, Sandy and Amy. Well, they both compete, but they compete on different teams most of the time.
Sounds about right.
I think it was a relationship management decision.
Yeah, don't blame them.
In terms of the board riders, what is really interesting is that not all the board riders have previously boarded. So some of them have learnt to horse board and to ride a board to be towed behind a horse. But some of them, well, all of them have had riding lessons, even if they hadn't had anything to do with horses before. So, and it's quite interesting to see people who wouldn't normally have anything to do with horses gain a bit of knowledge. I remember the first time I heard a couple of board riders were stood. We got a new horse turned up and it was warming up in the arena from a new team somewhere. And a couple of the board riders were stood by the side of the arena. I just happened to be walking past them. And I heard one of them go, "Oh yeah, it looks like that'll make a good horse, that one will." And I just thought, when did you guys learn anything about horses? Do you know what I mean? Obviously towing around the back of them. And now, of course, they all go to the stables, they help out. They're not necessarily, you know, they're a bit more fair weather riders if they ride at all. And the same with the grooming and the mucking out. Obviously only that needs to be done on a fair weather day just before a competition. But it's nevertheless, they do show and do become very connected to the horses as well. You know, the horse is a very important member of the team.
Well, they need to trust them just as much, and it's really lovely that they are getting that involved with the horses, because it's only going to enhance their performance, that they'll learn where the horse is moving, how he's moving to the side, and they can then anticipate what's going to happen for them to be able to stay on the board, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And if the horse has got any particular quirks, like some horses will try and cut the corners a little bit sharp. You know, they might try and go like corner flagging from one gate directly to the next gate, which sometimes the border won't be around the corner. So as much as the horse rider can try to compensate, you know, and try and keep them off the poles or whatever, the board rider also needs to be slightly aware. Oh, my horse is just taking that slightly stride in. Mm-hmm. He's going to cut this corner now. I need to try and get in the right angle so that I don't end up coming away from the handle.
So we wouldn't advise anybody to just go and stick a mountain board on the back of a horse and go and have a go, because there's so much that goes into the training. How do you start training these horses to be able to take a board rider?
Well, I mean, yes, I would advise everybody to come along to a training session, but it's not to say that people don't train their own animals. We use a lot of the exercises actually initially in the training that we use when we're working horses in film and TV. And it's all about creating an environment that the horse can move away from if he needs to. So one of the main things that we will use in, just to, you know, diversify slightly to the filming, if we've got a horse that's particularly doesn't like loud bangs or doesn't like fire or something like this, we will set, let's say, somebody who we've introduced with a shield and a sword in a bit of a field, and we'll get a horse then to walk around that person, and then we'll start to make noises, banging on the shield and so on and so forth. Now if the horse doesn't like it, we allow the horse to step away from that circle, but we then bring him back onto the circle, and we keep doing this until he's happy on that circle, and eventually we'll bring him into the center, and he'll get a pat from the guy that's banging the shield, and eventually in a short amount of time, you can have the shield on the back of the horse and you can be whacking the hell out of it and the horse won't react. Obviously, that's not true for every horse, but that's a general process. So taking those, and we do similar things with fire and any scenario that you can come up with. But it's not about any point with horses in any area. It's not about forcing them into it. It's about educating them to accept it, that it's safe. So the same scenario works. So the first thing that I do is see the horse, obviously say hello in the first place, get us on talking terms first, and then I'll have them do the exercise. And initially I've just got the rope, and I'll just stand there with the rope, and the rider walks around. And one of the main things about this is that you don't bring over attention to what it is that you're doing. So we'll have a conversation about the weather or whatever, and it's just a very metronomic conversation, and I'll just be talking, and as I'm talking I'm playing with the rope and I'm just doing whatever with it. And then eventually I'll ask the horse to come in a particular way, as the horse riders bring the horse in a particular way and stand next to me, a little bit of desensitization with the rope over the horse just to make sure there's no tickly spots. Then we'll practice, but it's all as well making the horse happy that where I am is a safe place to be.
Would long lining help with this? Because long,
it gives
long,
them experience, obviously.
Because long learning teaches them to be ahead of you and to trust themselves as well as trusting you, and it's okay for you to be behind them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's good experience for them. This is a different exercise, though, so you have to be... So the rope is... The reason that we do this with the rope is every horse has seen a rope, you know. Sometimes when we do the quick releases, you get that slight little chink of the metal, and sometimes the horses will have a little reaction to that. But really, it's an exercise within an exercise, because we're showing them a game, and that we're going to move on with later on. So if you start this game with simple things, before you know it, you can build it up the same game and keep changing the thing that you're introducing, so that they can become more and more extreme, because the horse knows, oh, I know this game. This must be, I go in a minute, I'm going to go over there next to whatever this great big app.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Paratuses or whatever this big scary thing is, which isn't scary because when I go there, I'm going to get a pat. So, and we just do it that way. Talking on the more extreme level. So once we've got him happy with the rope, we'll then ask the horse just to walk across the arena in a straight line and just start putting weight on the handle and start pulling on the handle so that the horse starts to engage and starts to walk. Some horses will tend to back off the pace and almost stop. And so we do say to the horse, right, just give him a little bit of leg just to encourage him and talk to him, you know, talk to them, just make sure they go forward. We do that a little bit, go to him, unhook, put the rope down, get the board out. Now, the board, so what we're kind of playing on at this point is that the horse has already played the one game, had a nice experience doing it, and now we're going to play the same game again, but with something that he actually hasn't seen before. So the mounting board, potentially, they've never seen. Also, people forget, it's not just about what something looks like, it's about what it does and how you explain to a horse what something is designed for. So, for example, a board on its own isn't a problem. If you roll a board randomly through the stable yard, none of the horses are going to like it because they don't understand what it is. It's this thing just going on the road. So we show them the board. We carry on with our same conversation about nothing. And then as the horse is walking around, I start to stand on the board. I start rolling the board backwards and forwards all the time, just checking that the horse has kind of seen it and eventually stand on the board and then eventually be jumping up and down on the board and still carrying on the conversation. So the conversation, the horses, what we're not doing is going, oh, look at this, you know, because this is something important you need to look at. What we're doing is, this is a normal bit of life. You just haven't seen it before. And we're just being doing it. Anyway, this takes as long as it takes me to explain it is as long as it takes me to show the horse to explain it.
Really? So, I would have thought it would take weeks to get
minutes,
them used to something.
Minutes. Honestly, the horses, you only need to explain something to a horse once. And they can, if you explain it correctly the first time, they're well away. Again, this is not 100%.
Certainly not my horse. I have to explain it every day.
Yeah, there are horses out there that won't help you in this scenario. But the difference with this as well, compared to a lot of other activities, is that from a horse's point of view, they've never done it before. So they've got no, initial reason, they've not had a bad experience with it. Mm-hmm. So as long as you make this first introduction good, then it should be okay. Similarly to when you're teaching horses to joust or whatever. So not to diversify too much.
So but you're quite far away, Dan. Like, you, where are you based?
I'm based in Nottingham, but okay. we work all over the country.
You do work all over, but if somebody in Wales wanted to bring their horse to you in Nottingham, that's quite far. So are you available on phone support? Is there ways that you can still help people even if they can't get to you?
I'm quite happy for people to email me or to give me a call, and I'll discuss these sorts of exercises with them. Also, we do have several training centres. So we have one opening for horse boarding in Chippenham in the very near future. We have another one in Chobham, which is opening later this year. And we have a few they're going to be the first two that are most likely to start in the immediate future. So there are other venues where we can organise things.
Great,
from.
That's good. So yeah. There'll be lots of places where we can take our horses to come and have those first few lessons.
Yeah, and also as well, I mean, our training at the moment is very much set up. It's not really have a go. It's set up for people who are genuinely interested in getting involved in the sport. So if people are interested, then we also run the training days at the venues where we have the competitions. So on the Friday or the Saturday prior to our event, which would be then the Saturday, Sunday or the Sunday, Monday. For example, we're in Burley on the 28th and 29th. On the 27th, we have a training day there. And so, you know, if you're going to bring your horse to really get involved in the sport, you need to follow the championship or at least be involved with some areas of the championship. So, you know, you've got to be prepared to travel your horse to us so that we can do it, so that you can then come on the competitions.
Mm. Oh, yeah. So you've got to be used to traveling then, I guess, anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. At the moment, I mean, in the future, yes, we will have local. The plan is we'll have local clubs everywhere and local riding centres, more local riding centres running clubs.
Well, that would be right good. Now, that would be good because, like, for example, my horse, I'd love to have a go, but my horse isn't, we all know he's got an injury to his right leg. I wouldn't be able to gallop him around an arena. I'd be lucky if I can get a canter out of him, you know, and he's not strong enough. But I'd love to have a go at this, but I don't have a horse that's suitable. So at the moment, what do we have to do? Team up with people that we know that have good horses, and then maybe at a later date, there might be horses available for us to use.
Yes, exactly. That's pretty much where we're going. That might be the case in Chobham relatively quickly. And that's going to be at the Westcroft Polo Club there.
What kind of horses would make a good horse boarding horse?
We have all sorts that race. I mean, most horses will take to it. As long as you've got a pretty straightforward horse in terms of he goes when you want, stops when you want, turns when you want, and generally listens to the rider, then they will most likely take to horse boarding. In terms of what depends on what you're looking for when you say what's good and safe. Well, you can have a nice safe cob. You can have a nice, you can also have unsafe cobs as well. Don't get me wrong. But you can have something that's a simple ride, or you can, if you're looking for something good, that's going to compete in the elite standard, as well. We do have a traditional gypsy cob that competes within the elites. But most of the elite class is made of ex-race horses, ex-polo ponies, sports horses. But pretty much anything that's got a turn of speed will do it. And the thing is, even if you haven't got a turn of speed, you don't have to qualify up into the elite. You can stay in the intermediates and race it at that level. You don't have to go up against the ex-race horses and teams that have been doing it for 6-7 years and winning.
Well, ponies are great for that, aren't they? Because just like the Gymkhanas, they're really agile, they can move quickly, they can nip around, and if you do fall off, it's not so far. I love the welfare that you have for the horses as well. You know, in your list of rules, you've got a whole section on horse welfare. And what do you do to make sure that the horses are safe and looked after?
Well, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. And like you say, all those rules are, to be an organisation within a equestrian world, you've got to have horse welfare as a consideration, and particularly for something that's as new as this. As in every sport, or at least there should be, you know, there is extensive rules of what you can and can't do, and, you know, making sure that everything's okay with the ponies, really.
And, you know, after the heats,
specifically.
You have vets that check them over, and just like all the other major sports, there's veterinary advice on hand if there's any injuries. Not that we have many injuries, but, yeah, you know, it's always about the safety, the welfare of the horse is probably more important than the border and the rider. Because at the end of the day, these teams, they own their horses. They love for them. Yep. They care for them. They want to make sure that they're okay. And that it's about being fun. It's a fun sport that's safe, that's enjoyable. So your plans then, I mean, it's really kicking off now. I just think it's an amazing sport. I'm so behind it and really excited about it. I can't believe, actually, Dan, that you've been going this amount of time and I've only just heard about it, because my other half would love to have a go. My dad wants to have a go. He can't wait. And, you know, even my brother hates horses because they always hurt him. But even he said, you know, this is a sport that I would be able to enjoy with you as my sister. And actually, it's exciting and it's really, it's really fun. So what are your plans then, like, for this year?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's been trying to grow a sport like this from nothing. is quite a big challenge. It's a bit like trying to start show jumping all over again, you know. thanks to the, you know, things like the internet and so on and so forth, that we're able to get out there, reach out to a lot more people and get a lot more coverage than you would if you were a couple of people playing around in a field. So for the rest of our year in, year out, is to keep pushing forward. We're very keen to bring in new teams and develop more methods in terms of, like, the training centres in which it's easier for people to come into the sport. It is still very much, at the moment, our focus is bringing people into the sport to compete within the national championships. The national championships does go from novice through to elite, and the novices is meant for that, in terms of, obviously, your riding ability has to be walk, trot, canter, and you have to be, you know, confident and comfortable with what you're doing and comfortable and confident with your horse. But the novice championship is based for people who are just starting out and just getting around the course. It's not meant for people who are racing flat out. You know, a lot of what we publicize is, of course, the elites and the way that they race, because it's amazing. But the novice is open to all. All you have to do is your assessment, which is very simple. For a rider, can you basically canter a big figure of eight? And for a board rider, can you hang on to the horse while it canters a figure of eight? Effectively, in the shortest possible terms. Now, so the growth of the sport is to add more events to our calendar. We are moving into some more interesting venues. We went to the FEI World Cup Dressage in Denmark last year. We took four teams to that, which was amazing.
Let me just hold you there. What on earth were they thinking when they saw you? Their mouths must have dropped, because you go from, you know, really, really elite dressage, athleticism, and it's very well put together, and it's always the same that we've seen for years, to you guys hollering down a microphone going, and he's getting round the corner and he's going to fall off. And I'd love to have seen their faces.
It was the reaction was absolutely amazing. I mean, we went on just after Lorenzo, so we were in very good company. Yeah. And by the third race, I mean, it was one of the proudest moments of my life, really. But by the third race, the crowd couldn't make any more noise. They were screaming so much they couldn't make any more noise. And this was all indoors, of course. And they would continue to scream and cheer and all that sort, but they just started whistling. And the whole crowd just started whistling, and it was just this amazing uproar of sound. And that just went on and on from then on in, really. So, it was a great experience for all the teams that went, and for ourselves. And there is a video actually online, so I'll send you a link to that. There's a full documentary that we did for it. But then also we are going out to Holland this year to an event, which isn't an FEI event. It's a country show festival in Holland, and running the championships. And then for next year, you know, we'd love to extend our season into more of the winter venues, indoor winter venue, international shows in this country. But we're also talking to international shows all around the world. So we are, you know, we're keep pushing, but keeping our feet on the ground in terms of the national championships, and making sure that we can continue to bring more people into the sport and to make a nice environment for people, which is very important to us.
Oh, Dan, I'm getting so emotional for you because it's just incredible. I'm picturing that crowd cheering now and knowing you, knowing how much you've grown this, or you know, you've done all of this and you've kept going, you've kept pushing it, you've believed in your sport, and now to have other people, it must be incredible to have, you know, the top of the industry going, this is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've still got a bit of work to do with the particularly the international. I mean, the show in Denmark is a show which does like to try and find something very different, and they're prepared to take a risk. As we know from a lot of the FEI internationals or international events, particularly indoor events, their arena time is very precious. So they want to see something as a completely finished product before it goes in there, which is fully understandable. So as great as that event was, we're not finished yet. We still have a lot more work to do. You know, I would very much like to go to Horse of the Year and Olympia and Liverpool. For this country, they're on my target list. So's Your Horse Live as well.
So we need to be hammering them with tweets then, don't we? Saying we need to see, because we need to see Horse Boarding UK there, because it's just like the Shetland Grand National, you know, that's become a household name across all the major shows. And it would be great to see you guys there too.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I say, we've not been going that long in terms of, I mean, what you have to consider about Olympia is that the carriage driving, I only went in there a few years ago, the extreme driving. One of the most, as someone who's worked in very extreme environments with horses and done some pretty extreme stuff myself, there's not a lot in terms of horse acts that really, really, really impress me. But that carriage driving, the elite extreme carriage driving at Olympia, blows my mind every time. Those guys are so far on the edge. And I've worked with a lot of carriages in film and TV as well. So, like, I know that those guys have got something missing, you know, in the mind to do that stuff.
Incredible, aren't they?
Yeah. So, and the thing is, that was started in the 70s, I believe, by Prince Philip. It took about 30 years before it got into Olympia. So we haven't got the same sort of pedigree. So I would expect it would take us a little bit of time. But I'm quite happy for that, because everything that we're doing at the moment, you know, with the nationals and with our other events that we're involved in as well, is all about, you know, polishing what we're doing and making the team of guys that are in the back, you know, the ground staff, what we're doing on terms of the commentary, the computer system that manages it, the live streaming, everything that we're doing is all part of that development. So I feel it will happen. It's just a matter of time.
Of course it will happen. I have full faith. It's got to happen. If not, we need to make it happen. You also have horseboarding, I was going to say horseboarding UK. You also have people doing horseboarding in other countries as well as Holland. You've got horseboarding Australia, I think I saw.
Yeah, there's quite a few. So last year in particular, we had a lot of social media coverage, and with different magazines and stuff, we reached about 8 million people around the world. So that resulted in quite a few orders for our harnesses and for information going out to other countries, which we've pretty much sent now to all over the world. So there are little groups starting everywhere. I had an email actually yesterday from Georgia, the country, as it was put, saying we want to start horseboarding down here. How can you help us to set up a club and all this sort of thing? So, you know, but also throughout the people in everywhere they're South Africa, America, all across Europe, but they're all in their very, very early baby steps at the moment. Horseboarding UK is the largest organization.
Well, Horseboarding UK should own it all, I think. So I hope you've got the IP for the world, because it looks like you're gonna need it.
Well, what we do is we run our international events under Horseboarding International. So the future will be that these other countries will affiliate to Horseboarding International, and then any international competitions they'll of course have to be following the rules as set out by Horseboarding International, and therefore be affiliated to it and so on. So that would be our equivalent of like the FEI or something along those lines.
One day, Daniel, you will be at the Olympics and we'll say, do you remember our conversation when this little stunt man turned into an international mogul for horseboarding? It's incredible. I'm so, so pleased for you. And I'm really excited about the future for horseboarding. And we're going to be following your journeys and some of your riders and your teams. And they're going to give us an insight into their world of horseboarding and the training that they do and how they get their horses ready for competitions and things like that. And we can follow you on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, can't we? What are your handles?
Facebook is the best one, Horseboarding UK. The other accounts basically are all linked in, so the Twitter and Instagram and all that, they're linked into the Facebook account, so you'll see stuff on there, but really Facebook's got the up-to-date stuff. It's got the videos as they come out. It's where we do our live streaming currently. So it's Horseboarding UK on Facebook.
Yeah. Now, you also need to get your little backside on Twitter a bit more. We know this. So for all our Twitter fans, it's at Horseboarding UK. And I'm determined to get you using Twitter more. So thank you so, so much for joining us, Dan. It's a pleasure to talk to you. We can head to your website if we'd like to find out more information, which is horseboardinguk.org. And we can follow you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And hopefully we'll catch up in a few months and you can let us know how it's going. Would that be okay?
That'd be wonderful.
Great. All right. We'll speak to you soon. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I really do believe that Horseboarding UK is the most fun sport I've seen for horses in a long, long time. And if you'd like to find out more information, then you can get all the details at our website, horsehour.co.uk. While you're there, why not pop in your email address so that I can send you lots of advice and education from each of our guests each week. And there's lots of other advice there for you as well, including things on diseases from the vets at B&W Equine Vets, infectious diseases. You can listen to all our previous episodes too of the Horse Hour podcast, and you can keep up to date with all the events that we go to. So all the pictures, videos, backstage interviews from badminton and the Royal Windsor Horse Show are on the website, as well as all our social channels, which are Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, and we're even on YouTube. So there's lots of ways to stay up to date. Next week is very, very exciting because we speak to William Whittaker. He's the nephew of Michael and John Whittaker. He's an amazing show jumper, and he's kind enough to let us into his world of what it's like being an international show jumper. Please keep sending your photos because I love to see your journey and see what you're up to. Hope you have a really good week, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag HorseHour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.